Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network review of Netflix original series Voltron, Legendary Defender Season 1. We don't know if there'll be a Season 2. They certainly set it up for a Season 2. But for now, it's just Season 1, 13 episodes. Tonight, I am joined by the host of the Hentai, Sentai, Frentai, Happy Go Fun Time, Konnichiwa, Domoro, Gato, Mr. Roboto, all things Japanese podcast, and Sinophile in his own right. Would you be a Sinophile? Or is that Chinese? I don't know. I'm just making things up at this point.
Sinophile is Chinese.
Sinophile is Chinese, so he's not a Sinophile, folks.
Sinophile.
Which one? Nihophile. Thank you. Who is not my wife, Mr. Robert Cooper, co-host, of course, of the Metal Hammer of Doom. How are you doing there, Mr. Cooper?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, especially because I finally get to talk about something that, while not quite anime, it's pretty much anime.
let me say right off the bat, I'm not a huge fan of anime. I know all my friends were into it. I tried to get on the bandwagon. I tried to like Akira. I tried to like Fist of the North Star. I have tried to get into all the anime stuff that my friends were into. I just don't care. So, but I loved Voltron as a kid. So this is where we meet in the middle, sir. This is as far as I go into anime. Because I love me some Voltron. I have very fond memories of watching the show as a child. But yes, you are a resident Nihophile, all things Japanese anime. So I'm excited to have you on to talk about this.
I'm excited to be on, because originally I remember you saying, hey, that's easy to do this. And I was like, okay. And then I totally forgot about it. And then I was like, oh, it's going to come out. And I went, well, okay, I'll do it. So yeah, it's pretty cool to be here. As I said before the show started, actually a very interesting thing for me is I was not part of the Voltron generation. I actually I kind of missed the boat, and then I was a Power Rangers kid, but now I get to defend Power Rangers from those kids that are like, they ripped off Voltron, because it didn't.
You know there's going to be a summer blockbuster Power Rangers movie next year, right?
Oh, I've seen the costumes, and I went, huh, this looks very much like every other matured up, can I say matured up? Is that a good way to say it? Pretty much dark and gritty summer blockbuster as brought to you by Hasbro, except this one's not Hasbro. I mean, it pretty much just kind of has that same... I would say almost like a samey. Yeah, the same samey feel. kind of like the Transformers had. Like, it had a really empty quality to it. Now, am I going to show up at that damn movie with my Power Rangers shirt, with my damn Legacy Power Morpher, and on night one, oh, you bet your sweet ass I'm going to show up there. But, it's not something that I'm really excited for in the same way, let's say, like Conjuring 2. I was really stoked about that movie because I thought it was going to be really good. Not quite so much. But, it'll be a movie and people will go see it and the critics will probably hate it and blah, 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 blah. But, hey, at least we get quality reboots via Netflix now, right?
Well, we do. Now, you said you missed Voltron in its 1984 run. When were you born exactly?
1991.
Oh, boy. Boy, howdy did you miss Voltron. I was 8 years old when that was out back in 1984.
Oh.
And I remember watching it vividly. And as I said before, it was the only Japanese-style animation that I truly appreciated and loved. And I was a huge fan of Voltron. I had the toys and everything. Back then it was very much serialized. It was, you know, there was a pattern to Voltron. You had the Evil Empire, and the Evil Empire would send some sort of I guess they call it a robe beast or something like that, you know, giant thing, and Voltron, the lions would form Voltron. And they would fight it, and that was sort of every episode. This series, Voltron Legendary Defender on Netflix, was a series-long story arc. The episodes themselves may have had some singularity to them, but they served an overall story that ends with a bit of a cliffhanger. It's resolved, but it starts to lead into what, you know, what might be our second season. So right there, I thought that's a vast improvement over the original Voltron. Now, have you gone back and seen any of the original Voltron, or have you just completely passed it by?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. The funny thing was probably, I want to say, 96, 97, was it? Probably 97. I think Voltron was being syndicated through television and occasionally on the Toonami block before it got all the DBZ and all that. But I missed the boat on that. It had Robotech as well, which is another one of those anime stalwarts. I've not watched a whole lot of the original Voltron. I've also not watched a whole lot of the original Japanese source footage, Beast King Go Lion, or the vehicle Voltron, which I can't remember the full name, but it's Dive Rugger. That's what it was called. I didn't even know there was a vehicle Voltron for the longest time. I would say that this is probably the ideal way to kind of update a series like this, taking a show that was very much your typical influenced by Super Sentai, which I'll get into that a little bit, probably in a minute or two, but very much Monster of the Week with a very loose plot line, you know, the big Galactic Empire getting their mooks defeated one by one every week by our mighty heroes after they form the Megazord and summon the Giant Zord, or form Blazing Sword, which, by the way, I don't know if you caught it during the show, but when Shiro, our Black Lion leader, was talking about, he's like, all right, so they'll form the head, they'll form the arms, they'll form the legs, and I'll form the head, right? I was just snickering. I'm like, oh, you did it. You got that in there.
I like that.
Yeah, it was,
the occasional nod to the original series was fun.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know what to really expect coming into this. I knew the pretty much the entire art team behind The Legend of Korra and Avatar The Last Airbender was on board for this. The only people that weren't involved from that team were, I think, the creator and writer, the two creators slash writers for those shows. So this was a different writing crew. Actually, I meant to IMDb them to see what other writing credits these people had. But I think they did overall a pretty solid job with what they had here. They they started out with that first episode, which is really about three episodes long. It started out a little slow, but I knew what I was getting into because I know I bring up Super Sentai all over again here. This show very much felt like a Super Sentai series, which for the undereducated on the subject is, of course, Japanese Power Rangers. Because at the beginning of most of those series, it's kind of slow. They're learning their powers, usually, unless there's a few series where they haven't. They're kind of learning their powers, learning how everything works. And then for the first, let's say, 5, 6, 7 episodes, we're just they're learning teamwork and about each other. And then I think by the end of this season, we reached maybe, I would say, that halfway point in a series where everything looks doomed and we don't know what's going on and everything's going all crazy. But they also did a great job of, again, like in these Sentai series, they're making the characters distinct. I think so. They were a lot different from their 1984 counterparts as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, Hunk, I thought it was a smartened up version of his original self. Pidge was a girl version of the same character. I thought everyone was a more sharp, more mature version of their counterparts from the original series.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking in that one. Like Honk, I love. It's funny, like. All the characters were really likable and special in their own way. Like Honk, I loved Honk because you saw different aspects of his personality. Like, yeah, he's kind of goofy, slightly kind of cowardly in a way, but then kind of that part in the middle. I'm trying to keep it a little, kind of keeping it spoiler free because the show's pretty fresh. You know, they get kind of stabbed in the back a little, and then you see that he's one of those, he's a very guarded character, actually. Like, he is the first person to become suspicious of some interstellar hitchhikers that they come across. And it's really interesting. Him, Shiro, which, reading on the original series, actually, they did some reordering of the team members and their lions. For example, Shiro, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, was called Sven? In the original series, apparently Shiro is an homage to his Go Lion name. I think, what was it? He did the Red Lion in the original series?
I don't remember.
No, he was Blue Lion. Blue Lion, okay. I was literally just reading this. That's why I was kind. But, yeah, he went from being the, I guess, kind of the backup character, and apparently he died in the original series, believe it or not. Well, in the Japanese series, and then was replaced by his twin brother, straight out of Beer Fest, I swear. he got replaced, and now they've changed him to being a very much kind of quiet leader, the quiet stoic leader that always does the right thing, but always tries to do the right thing, has kind of a checkered past with the empire that they're fighting. And I think that's a smart idea because they switched him with Keith was the I think the leader in the original series, and now they've changed him to, I would say, the least I'm not gonna say least developed, but I think he's the character they really paid the least attention to because
he doesn't do a lot. You know, he almost becomes like the brute of the group. You know, Honk has this really character arc where, like, he starts off as sort of, you know, where he's, you know, the big, clunky, brutish type. But he has this amazing hero arc that makes him one of the centerpieces of the series, whereas Keith is just, you know, all I knew about Keith is he likes to fight.
Yeah, I almost say that they did an okay job with him because they only had 11 episodes, and I would say, 6, 7 characters to work on. So with Keith, I would kind of give them a pass for it because they established enough in the debut episode that he was the runaway. He's kind of the lone wolf type. And while we don't get a ton to his character, you get some character interactions like him and Lance in some of the later episodes, like kind of just poke it, you know, just kind of jabbing each other verbally. And you kind of get the feeling that he's warmed up to them as a team. I think in a second season, they can probably do a lot more with him, considering the final battle was actually Keith and the Big Bad. And it was really interesting because you got to see like him pull out this freaking attack out of his ass, which more Super Sentai stuff. That's what they always do. Randomly pull a new power out of their ass in the middle of the fight.
let me speak on that really quick. It was one of the things I really enjoyed about the series was that there was no one there to sort of teach them how to use the lion. So they're just sort of figuring it out as they go along. And so they would, you know, accidentally find a new weapon. You know, it made the series more interesting because you didn't get everything about Voltron in the first few episodes. It took almost the entire season to, you know, as they discovered what Voltron could do. And there's still more that it could do that we don't even know about yet. So it makes the Voltron character itself a little bit more interesting because it isn't fully developed and you don't know everything about it and you haven't seen it all just yet.
I think that's true. And I also think that an even more interesting thing is that they didn't fall into that trope that you get from your giant robot series or your Power Rangers or Super Sentai where oftentimes they just get into it and they know what to do. They're just like, yep, we're good. Like they struggled to even fight cohesively for half the series. And that really adds a lot of the tension to the show because, well, hell, our heroes aren't even quite competent sometimes. Also
there's
a little thing.
There's an episode where, now, am I right? Are they called Robeast? Is that the correct name for the big bad that they send at them?
I wanted to give me a hot second because I saw a name for them. I wouldn't say they're like Gladiator. Yeah, just Robeast. You're right.
Okay. So there's one episode where there's a robe. Now, by this point, they've gotten the gist of what Voltron can do, and they've been successful with the couple of attacks that they've learned. And then the Galra Empire sends this Robeast at them that fires a zillion lasers. they disform Voltron there. They run around as lions, and they haven't the foggiest clue what to do with this thing. And they really have to start thinking on their feet and figuring out, like, okay, nothing we've done up at this point is going to work. We need to, you know, sit down and rethink this whole thing and how we're going to beat this thing. Because right now, if we go at it the way we've been, we're going to die. Meanwhile, the thing's shooting at them. You know, I enjoyed the hell out of that episode. It's probably one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It actually has a lot of standout stories because I know we talked about, I'd say there are about two or three episodes that would fall in, that kind of fall into filler territory to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, they're not necessary to the storyline as a whole, but I feel like they really help you understand the world and the characters that we're working with.
I wanted to give you an opportunity to dig into some of the lore and give some of the background here, which I feel like you've done. But I do also kind of not necessarily take it episode by episode, but I do want to sort of tackle this in some sort of logistical order because there are certain things about each episode that I want to talk about. So if there's anything more about the background of the lore that you want to get into real quick, now's the time. Otherwise, I kind of want to actually talk about the premiere, we'll call it the premiere episode, which is the first three episodes.
I'll say, just to finish out character talk, Pidge, totally different from the original version. A vast upgrade, I would say. Instead of just being the geek that does all the techno babble, has an actual emotional story arc that ties into Shiro's character and adds real conflict to the show that doesn't really come across in the same cliche way that it always does. Like, sure, there's some cliche to that, but I think they do a pretty good job of maintaining really a sensible mind to enacting that cliche. Like, oh, why is Pidge going to leave? Okay, well, this makes sense. And then finally, Lance. I love Lance. Always trying to get the ladies. My boy.
My favorite Lance moment is right at the beginning where he's got his arm around somebody and he blinks at them and you can actually hear the blinking. It was one of those standout moments where I was like, okay, they're not taking this too seriously. Great. You know, they're having fun with it.
Yeah. I think that was that's really something key about this, is that it wasn't some dark and serious show. It was very much like the Avatar and stuff. Like, there's plenty of seriousness in it, but at the core, our characters are mostly goofballs to a degree, and they have fun being around each other, and I feel like that's really important. And I think the final character to really bring up, Tim Hedrick. Okay, so the guy wrote for Avatar and The Legend of Korra, and he wrote for The Weakest Link. Isn't that interesting? But Allura, our queen, pretty cool. I don't know anything about her in the original series, but I'll say that in this series, I felt like she did a really nice job of breaking away from stereotypical princess mold.
Yeah, she was a do-something princess, which was nice. And I loved Korin. I thought he was a great character. I thought he rode that line between being a valuable member of the team and being comic relief. You know, he was very much the Jarvis or the Batman's butler.
Alfred?
Yeah. You know, the Alfred of the group. And he was great. You know, I thought when he was on screen, I was interested in what he was going to say or do. He was never too dry or too uninteresting. I don't think there's no throwaway characters in this. Everybody is using their screen time very well, and everyone was written for very well. So we've talked very positively about Voltron. Let me say the one negative thing about it. The episodes for me were a bit of a slog to get through. While I can appreciate from a narrative point of view the idea of them struggling to get this, you know, first of all, struggling to come together as a team, recognizing the greater evil, introducing all the characters, finding the lions, then getting the lions to work, then getting the lions to work together to form Voltron. So the first 3+1 episodes, because the episode number 4 is Some Assembly Required, where they're still, you know, struggling to form Voltron and work together as a team. So really, that's the first 4 episodes. I remember it took me a couple of times to get through. It was like I kept losing interest, you know, or nodding off or whatever. And I just was, I can't describe it any other way than it was a slog. I found myself like not hating it, but not in recognizing that it was written well enough, but it wasn't keeping my interest. When we got to 5, 6, 7, and 8, especially 7 and 8, where they start to deal with the Balmera, that's when I really got into the show. That I loved those episodes. And by the time it was over, I wanted more Voltron. So it succeeds in picking up as the series goes on, but it's a slow, sloggy, almost overstuffed first 4 episodes. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that first episode, I think, especially because when I started it, it said an hour, and I went, oh, no. I thought every episode was going to be an hour. I got really worried. I was like, oh, no, I don't know what I signed up for. That first episode, again, I'm kind of used to that sort of format of, you know, them having to find their powers, activate their powers, get the powers to work. Now, granted, I'm used to them at least defeating the monster in the first episode or two. But, it took a bit long for them to get Voltron, but I really feel like if we get more seasons of this, which I'm sure we will, if Fuller fucking House can get a second season, I think this can.
Well, like I said before, the way they end this thing, if they're not doing a second season, I'll be sorely upset.
Well, I mean, hey, I've seen, I played plenty of things where they expected that second season, and it didn't do well enough to warrant it. yeah, that kind of ruins things, too. But I would say that ending of that definitely warranted a continuation. Fuller House. I never watched Full House. I didn't think it was funny as a kid. I don't think it's funny as an adult, quite frankly. I've taken, like, loose shits that I thought were farts that were much better.
Well, Pat and Mullen disagrees with you wholeheartedly. And you can
hear Pat
Mullen. And you can hear
Pat
Mullen.
And I would disagree.
Fuller House. Damn it.
I think he and I would probably disagree on a lot of things.
Yeah, you should hear the chat that we're in.
Judging from his Facebook feed, yes. I mean, he seems like a nice guy, but just, yeah. Yeah, ugh, that show. But anywho, yeah, Voltron, this new one, I really liked it. I do agree that the beginning was not nearly as good as the middle, or especially the end, because I thought that last episode or so was like, oh, wow, they made this all fall into place. and they added tension, which is something that is kind of hard to do in shows sometimes. Like, you know, a lot of times you're automatically convinced that everything's going to be okay, the heroes are going to win, nothing bad's going to happen, and then a show like this kind of, you know, moseys along the way, and you're like, well, shit, they might kill somebody. I don't know.
Well, that's second to last. I think where Allura is captured and they're having the debate aboard the ship about do we go after her or not. I was on the edge of my seat. I'm like, ooh, what are they gonna do here? And then that, you know, that 13th episode, that last bit there, it comes as if you look at Netflix and people are saying 13 episodes, I only see 11 here. It's because the first three episodes are one episode. That last bit there, you know, where they're deciding whether or not they're going to go get her, when they do, that 13th episode reminded me a lot of, like, the attack on the Death Star in Return of the Jedi. It's a very intense battle, and there's a lot going on, and I was really interested in how they were going to get through it. And what was happening, like, I wasn't just waiting for it to be over. I was legitimately interested in how they were attacking and defending and how they were going to get out of there.
Yeah. Move it, Jack. It was really, really interesting, I thought, the way they set that up. Because episode 12, you're just sitting there like, oh, shit. I guess it's one way to add tension for your second season. And then they go in and save her. I'm like, all right. And it was interesting because Voltron was not used during almost that entire episode. Actually, Voltron was ineffective.
Right.
Let's
go back. You know, we talked about the first three or four episodes where they're just trying to get this thing going and be a team. When we talked about that, that was a bit of a slow go. The next two episodes, 5 and 6, we have Return of the Gladiator and the Fall of the Castle of the Lions, which I think a lot of it has to do with Pidge, if I remember correctly. Pidge threatening to leave the team and wanting to go after his family. And I think by the end of those two episodes, he's decided that he's going to stay. Actually, Pidge's storyline resembles a couple of them, because what happens throughout the series, and I really like this, there's an element that they picked up on for almost all the team members, which was, hey, we didn't sign up for this. You know, Hunk actually says, like, I never said I wanted to be in Voltron, you know, and run around the universe and, you know, and be, you know, the universal cop. We had a home on Earth. We had lives. We had goals. These things sort of came out of nowhere. You know, and we agreed to help originally, but we didn't sign up for a lifetime of being Voltron. And I thought, wow, you know, that's an interesting thing to pick up on for characters. Because imagine your whole life being upended and you're going, okay, well, I want to help these people. I want to help Allura, and I want to help, you know, those little hobbit people from the first couple of episodes. But then the expectation being, no, you have to be Voltron forever now. You know, you can't go home again. And how that affects each of the characters and what that makes them feel like, and, you know, whether or not that produces resentment. I thought all of that was handled very well. Like, there are movies that I've seen this summer that don't do nearly as well in terms of drawing things out of the characters and examining their real life reactions to what's happening to them.
Yeah, they did a very good job of writing these characters as their age. At least that's the way I like to think of it. Kind of, they're supposed to be, what, teenagers or so. Most of them act like teenagers. If a teenager got put in that situation, I feel like that is how they would naturally react. And I like that how they're not, like, yeah, they want to help. But I think that they're kind of unaware of the responsibilities that come when you have something, you know, as massive as fighting, being one tank against an entire fleet of like, you know, I don't know, the Nazis. We'll call them space Nazis. They're space. Well, those are the Daleks, but space Nazis. I mean, sure, they are pretty much just outnumbered and outgunned. And then they're like, you know, okay, well, they defeat the immediate threat at hand, and they're like, well, all right, that's enough. I want to go home.
Right.
And I think I've
done my bit for Forgotten Country. It's over now. And then Laura turned to the, like, no, you signed up for a lifetime of this.
Yeah, and I think it really took an episode where it put an entire civilization of people, as well as them, at risk to realize, oh, we have to, you know, there's more than just our lives that are important.
Right.
And I think that was a really nice turning point.
Right. I think Hunk really sums it up very well, you know, in his commitment to freeing the Balmera from the Gowra Empire. You know, he comes to realize that the world is much bigger than him, Horatio, and that, you know, he's willing to make the personal sacrifice to make the lives of millions and billions better by being in Voltron and taking out this horrible galactic empire. It was a nice change of pace, because I think all too often what you get is people being offered the opportunity to be, you know, it's the comic book superhero thing. You've been imbued with these amazing powers, and instantly the person goes, I'm going to be a superhero, you know. It's like, well, no, not everyone comes to that conclusion instantaneously. You know, some people, resent the opportunity being thrust upon them. Some people don't want it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, did a decent job of handling that. When they started giving, you know, everybody on Earth different superpowers by virtue of the whatever thing that causes people to be inhumans, and, you know, and real human reactions, like, this is scary as fuck. I don't want this. I certainly don't want to run around being a superhero. I want to live a normal life. It's perfectly realistic. So it was nice to see that handled in the cartoon. I keep harping on it because I really, really like the Balmera story, where, you know, seven tiers of Balmera, then they sort of take a break with episode 8, where they're on their way there, but they end up running into these two characters who pull a fast one on them and steal the Blue Lion. So that was a great episode. That was fun. And then they go back to Balmera, which is where they run into the it's 10 where they run into the Roe Beast that has the crazy zillion weapons on him. But, you know, it's just the idea of the commitment to free the people from the Gowra, I really liked, and it was sort of the highlight of the season for me.
Yeah, that episode, I love the one where they pretty much great train robbery them. And then it's funny, they let them live, and then the next episode they're like, oh shit, they screwed us again. Because I really was like, well, I think they must have learned their lesson after Voltron blew up their, blew the pretty much thrusters out of the ship. No.
Mm-hmm.
No, they'll still pretty much sell anybody away for their own hides, which I thought was a nice little spin on the villain, on the, you know, the sad sack villains that were just trying to save their own hides. Because, you know, a lot of times you'll have a villain in a TV show or cartoon or whatever, you know, they'll realize the error of their ways. Not this time.
Let's talk about which was nice.
Good. I was saying it's nice, and it's really another indication of the more realistic characterizations that come from the writing of the show.
What did you think of episode 11? This is Crystal Venom. This is the one where basically the ship becomes haunted.
I thought that one was interesting. I thought it was a really interesting episode. I knew as soon as they plugged the bad guy up to the system that there was going to be problems. And when has this ever went right? I was like, oh, we'll get information out of him. I'm like, I don't know, guys. I don't think this is going to work very well.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really – I think it had some nice touching moments to it, especially when they had to, get rid of the AI on the ship. Because, you know, that's more or less breaking away one of our main characters pretty much one of the biggest pieces of their heart, more or less. I mean, the last remnant of her family.
I thought that was kind of sad at the end that she has to say goodbye to her father for really, not for play play. But I think building up to that, I have to say, you know, as far as what episodes I really liked, as I said before, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, I was really into it. And, you know, and the series just goes up. And 10's a good one, too. So I'll throw that in there. We got to number 11, and number 11 was kind of, you know what it reminded me of, in a way? The Fly episode in Breaking Bad. Where,
you know, I like that episode.
Everyone loves that episode. And then there's me who's just like, boring, gay. You know, I couldn't take it. It's one of those where you either love it or you hate it. And I think the only thing that sort of saves it for me is the emotional loss that she has in having to, delete the AI, which is her father. But, in a lot of ways, that's just a little bit of a throwaway episode. You know, it's just them fighting this haunted ship. And I don't know what really came of it.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe it was a breather episode in the writing room. I don't know. Because it really felt like one of those, kind of bring it back to our last Super Sentai and long, you know, your 50 episode running TV shows or whatever. Those episodes that you have kind of in the middle that are light and fun and goofy and have no, well, I guess they have stakes, but there's not a whole lot of stakes at the end of the day. Now, this is a little different because the ship was trying to kill them. But oftentimes those episodes are just kind of like they're your typical body switch episodes, what they usually are. But this one, you know, the haunted ship, I've seen that one before. I like the way that they did it, though. I mean, hey, they almost get killed by the food and then the airlock and then the training bot. So I don't know how they were going to get killed by zero G.
And then we move to our last two episodes. It's a two-part story. One where they go and they infiltrate the ship, and Alora ends up being captured. And then the season finale where they go back and rescue her. Loved them. Thought they were great. Thought there was a lot of action here. I enjoyed the reveal that she can change her heightened skin color. And again, she's not just a do-nothing princess. She gets very physical, you know, and she takes umbrage at them trying to sort of, push her to the back. And like, no, I can take care of myself, you know, and get this walking carpet out of my way, you know, that sort of thing. I enjoyed that. And then, of course, episode 13 is just all action. They have a rough time. You have the reveal that Zarkon is the Black Lion, the original Black Paladin, and he's kicking ass. And then you finally have the escape and then the cliffhanger. I thought it was a great cliffhanger. I was really attached to the characters, and I want to see what happens to them. And I'm anxious now for season two to find out, you know, where they all ended up. Go ahead and sort of let me say this to sort of sum the whole thing up, and I'll let you have your say about the last two episodes and the whole season, the whole thing overall. Going into it, having experienced a variety of Netflix-only shows, obviously Orange is the New Black. I think it's the best. My dad was a big fan of House of Cards. He doesn't watch it anymore. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. Most of the adult series on Netflix have done well. Obviously, some of them have even won awards. So, you know, Netflix hits with a lot of the adult stuff. However, because I've got kids, I've seen a lot of their kid stuff, like Dino Trucks, which is my son's a huge fan of. We watched the King Kong one that just came out. We tried watching Richie Rich, and I almost fucking threw myself through a plate glass window. It was terrible. And so what I'm saying is Netflix is a little hit and miss when it comes to their children's programming, their original children's programming. And I went into Voltron a bit timid, a bit afraid that this was going to be more Richie Rich and less Orange is the New Black, I guess. But this was clearly handled with care. It's a modern upgrade from the original 1984. I think it makes great use of both the traditional Japanese animation and current CGI. My one tiny complaint is the overuse of the forming Voltron footage. I understand that the homage to the original series where they did it in every episode, but it does, especially when you're marathoning this thing, binging, as they say, it gets tiresome. And your eyes, as I said last night, your eyes are last week on the Funkhouse Stampede, your eyes demand differentiation. It gets tired of looking at the same thing. And so after 13 episodes of the exact same sequence, I was like, we get it. Voltron was a thing in 1984. Can we update this a bit? Can we get a little different footage here? This is getting annoying. But that's a quibble. Other people might say, why mess with a classic? You know, and that's classic Voltron. And I'm sure you'll have an opinion on that. So overall, I'm gonna give this series, I'm gonna give it an A-. Go ahead. Let me hear your thoughts on 12, 13, the whole thing, and any last remarks that you have to make.
Episode 12, I felt like it was a good penultimate episode. It did a very nice job of setting everything up. Again, this, especially when you consider the resolution was very much like a Empire Strikes Back sort of situation for me, to where the heroes get away, but they're not unscathed. They just got their asses handed to them, and they really don't know where to go from there. So I think that's a pretty good comparison, actually. I think so. But I would say that it's a very good two-parter, wonderfully done. Episode 13, the thing I will say about that is that while it was all action-based, it did a very good job of revealing things during those action scenes. Like, you know, we find out, oh, big bad guy used to be the Black Paladin. Well, this is why we can't keep the lions near him. Oh, that's interesting. Who else could have been the old Paladin? I don't know. I think it's just a wonderful job of them continuing the plot line, even during action-heavy episodes, and I think that's something really special. As for them doing the transformation every episode, I snickered because that is quintessential giant robot Super Sentai trope of the transformation sequence that saved them just that much more of animation time. Yep. That's why when I saw it, I'm like, oh, you guys, this is wonderful. You know, it's really, it is, God, I wish I would have brought Hunter here. We could have made this Rattlish and Broadcasting Network Center Sentai Rider podcast crossover. Because we would have both been doing the same thing. Except he doesn't watch Sentai as much as I do. But this was very much like one of the old school giant robot / Super Sentai shows if it were updated and done for a more American audience. Overall, the characters were very well done. They were unique. They were likable. Most of them had a good story, like Lance and shit. I just forgot his name. But really, the brooding one. Damn it.
Huh? Heath?
No.
Hero? Who are we talking about here?
No. Keith. Jesus. The brooding one, Keith. Yeah, my brain went to a C, and I'm like, no, it's not Chuck. Yeah, Keith and Lance were more set characters. They were more archetypes that got to play around with they just got really more played with the other characters into the story. But I felt like they did a very good job of even using those characters and, again, making them likable. I think this show really can start perhaps a little resurgence for some Voltron fandom. I hope they bring back those robots, because I saw actually at a local antique mall here, it was missing a lion, but that old school Voltron, I was just sitting there, I was drooling a little. I'm like, it's so pretty. Oh, yeah. Like, every time a girl gets brought to my room, like, okay, well, if they know that I'm a geek, and that I like giant robots and shit, I have a dresser that has Megazords and action figures, transformation devices from the Tokusatsu shows, Gundam models, all that stuff. Just be like, here, look, I have cool shit. and we wonder why I'm still single. But yeah, overall, this was a really good series. I think I'd probably give it I want to say an 8 out of 10, maybe probably about a 7.5 out of 10. It was a good series. It had a few sputterings, especially with the beginning, kind of meandered a little, but I would say the character writing's great. The overall plot and the way that the characters connect to one another in terms of storylines is very impressive. It sets up for a lot of good things. The animation was pretty well done. I do have to say the CG animation has come a very long time since shows like Blue Submarine Number 6 from back in 2001, or that wonderful helicopter from GoGo 13, which is one of the worst fucking looking helicopters I've ever seen in an animated feature. Yeah, I'll have to send you that helicopter someday. It's pretty impressive. But, yeah, animation was well done. The team, a lot of that team from The Legend of Korra and Avatar, just a great team to get, which, by the way, those shows are good. If your kids haven't seen them, totally watch them. Okay. Maybe give Lily a year or two, but they're pretty good. I really think they're a great representation of how good kids' media can be. So good. But, anywho, yeah, 7.5 out of 10. Which I hate giving things half grades unless they're stars. But Jesse's not here to complete our rating scale. But yeah, it was well worth the time watching, and I am really, really, really excited to see what they do in terms of a second season.
Agreed. All right. I think that's it. Let's go ahead into plugs. You know, I didn't want to belabor this any more than we need to. I think we've pretty much summed it up fairly well. It looks. I was just checking the Netflix list of original programming, and it says pending, so it has not yet been renewed for a second season. We will see what happens. Clearly, they've got plenty of story for a second season if Netflix gives them the go ahead. If not, it'll be a crying shame. I hope people enjoyed it enough. And whatever mathematics, whatever equation they have for renewing something, I hope it met its criteria because, really, really good. With that said, this past week, Coop wasn't able to be with us for Volbeat, Seal the Deal and Let's Boogie, but if he had, he too would have hated it.
That's the best part. is that you guys, like, really love Volbeat. And I'm like, you know, they got some good songs, but they're overall fairly monotonous, and their singer has no range. I listened to part of the album just for you guys that night, and I was just like, that's a Volbeat album.
It certainly was, Ali. Last night, my father, Christopher Rattledge, a fan of High Fantasy in his own right, joined us as a special guest in our review of Warcraft, and a fun time was had by all. Next week, on the Metal Hammer of Doom, which will, because Cooper has to work, we'll do that on Wednesday. So Tuesday, we'll do Finding Dory. We'll be reviewing that movie, the new Pixar. Sure to make $1 billion. On Wednesday, we'll do Metal Hammer of Doom, the new Frost Unblatt, which drops in a few hours. And then on Thursday, Sean Comer and I are going to get together. And just as we did tonight with the Voltron series, we're going to review Orange is the New Black Season 4. So I have to work for the next 3 days. And in between working 12-hour days, I have to somehow cram an entire season of Orange is the New Black in before next Thursday. Can I do it with children around and a wife and everything and responsibilities? We'll see. After that, on Tuesday, June 28th, assuming I get home from killing hogs, yes, I'm going hunting on June 28th, and if I get home in enough time, we'll be reviewing Metal Hammer of Doom, Whitechapel, Mark of the Bleed. On Wednesday, we'll be reviewing Independence Day, Resurgence, and then on Friday, I'm going to see In This Moment and Hell Yeah at Janus Landing in St. Petersburg. It's going to be fun. And that brings us to July. And I have affectionately referred to July as Shit We Forgot Month, otherwise known as Cooper's Picks. So we're going to be – these are now, initially I had said, you know, we weren't going to review anything in July. Metal Hammer of Doom was going to take a short hiatus to recharge our batteries. And Cooper – what? There's nothing to recharge. Stupid. And there's plenty of albums to review. Stop living in a bubble. And I said, okay, Cooper, quit beating me. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to, you like how I reinterpreted everything?
I do. It makes me sound like a psychotic. I have psychotic episodes and really need a hug from my mother.
So Metal Hammer of Doom, we're going to go back and review on July 5th, Gojira Magma. Apparently, Metal Injection thought it was a fabulous album. That same week, we'll be reviewing The Legend of Tarzan. And then the UFC's got like three fights in a row, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So go ahead and check those out. Then we'll be reviewing on Thursday the new Lacuna Coil album that came out a few weeks ago, one of Jesse's favorite albums of the year. So, you know, whenever Jesse likes something, we always have a fun episode. The week after that, another one of Cooper's choices here. One of his favorite bands, we'll be reviewing the new Death Angel, The Evil Divide, and we'll be following that up with a review of Ghostbusters 2016. It's going to be fabulous. It's going to make $1 billion. And then Long Road to Ruin will be making its reappearance as we look at the first two Ghostbusters movies, and then we have a special part of the episode where Sean's actually going to review the Ghostbusters video game, the unofficial Ghostbusters 3. July 22nd, there's going to be a new Clutch side project album that's dropping. It's called Dunsmuir. We'll get to it. I'll tell you when in just a few moments. Because the following week, on Tuesday, I'll be at Gwen Stefani with my children. So no show then. But we'll be reviewing Star Trek Beyond on July 27th. And then on July 28th, Witherscape, The Northern Sanctuary. The following week, that's when we're going to get to Dunsmuir. That's August 2nd. Then we'll be reviewing the new Jason Bourne movie. And then Long Road to Ruin, we'll be looking at the Bourne trilogy. Now, Cooper, I have added some August dates here. Would you like to hear the August calendar?
Sure, Mark Radlich.
Okay. August 9th, Metal Hammer of Doom, Tarja, The Shadow Self. Now, here's where things get interesting. Because that same week that Tarja drops, another album is dropping.
and we're going to review it the week after that. And do you know what album that is?
No.
Are you ready? Because it's going to be spectacular. It's going to knock your socks off. You're going to say, oh my God, how have we never done one of these before? Are you ready?
I think.
Metal Hammer of Doom proudly presents to you Jackal with a Y and their new album, Royal.
Oh, I hope the Chainsaw makes an appearance.
Aren't you excited?
I am.
Oh, shit, baby. That week, actually, that's going to be a fun week because that week marks the end of the summer blockbuster season for us here at the Rattlism Broadcasting Network. We'll be finishing up with a review of Pete's Dragon. And then we're not doing another movie again until the end of September. But the Metal Hammer of Doom goes on, baby, because the following week, because I love Cooper and I want to make him happy, we're going to be reviewing the new Sabaton album, The Last Stand.
Ooh. I'm excited.
And then on August 24th, we'll do our summer movie wrap-up show, where we'll go from Civil War to Pete's Dragon, and we'll rate the movies and we'll talk about them. It's our mid-year special, sort of mid-year done in August. My math is a little off. The week after that, we'll be doing Running Wild, Rapid Foray, and then finally on September 6th, Metal Hammer of Doom, the Devin Townsend project, Transcendence. Which, by the way, September is also Alan Moore month here on the Rattlism Broadcasting Network. But I'll get into that when we get a little bit closer to September. So, what do you think? You excited about this calendar? That's several weeks of goodness right there.
So it's quite a bit of goodness there. So I was wondering, and as you mentioned it, like the longer it drew it, I'm like, yeah, where did you guys go?
I'm cutting back on some of those shows. I'm, giving Sean some time to, charge his batteries and,
do his Sean thing.
Do the Sean thing. Yeah. We've been doing a show every week and you haven't really, wanted to skip a week. So, I don't want to always every single week do three podcasts. So I figured something had to go. We had to do less of, and Long Road to Ruin made the cut of things I needed to cut. So we, one or two a month, and that's fine with me.
Yeah, I know. I saw on his Facebook he's got another. He's planning for another podcast. So yeah, looking forward to that.
If he gets it off the ground, there'll be plenty of space on the calendar for it if we're not doing, Long Road to Ruin every week.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, we're going to have some pretty cool metal podcasts coming up, too, which, I don't mind doing this every week, provided that I don't work every day. Hell, they tried to get me come in today, and I told them, sorry, guys, got to go get my cat's cancer medication.
Okay. All right, what else we got? You got anything that you want to plug real quick? Anything going on? Or are you just at a podcast this week?
Well, I'm technically at a podcast for this week. You can, of course, find me at Facebook on my Sentai Rider podcast page at facebook.com/Sentai Rider Podcast. That is Sentai Rider podcast. It's your home for all things tokusatsu, so you're giant robots and Kamen Riders and Ultraman and Godzilla movies. Oh, oh, oh. We're going to do something eventually, I swear. We keep getting people liking the page. I say that every week because people keep liking the damn page. There's some stuff I'd really like to do. I almost wish we could do some anime. Maybe I could ask the crowd if they want us to do anime and then they could not respond, and then I could do anime.
You want to do something, go do it.
Yeah, probably. Especially considering Hunter and I watch a lot of anime, so that's content we could be posting, right? This week I was on the Games to the Max podcast with Sean Garmer and the company. We reviewed the Microsoft press conference from E3. That was the only one I was able to make, but Gosh, it was so nice to be able to do things with Sean Garmer again. You can find him at Spreaker.com/WTM Network. They have a Wrestling to the Max, Games to the Max, Sports to the Max, and then actually a whole bunch of other podcasts that he hosts, which are wrestling or video game related. So there you go, really good stuff. And finally, speaking of the Awesome Blot, you'll be proud to be Mark Ravlich. I finally did my first pre-ordering with a T-shirt.
Oh, very nice.
$45 Canadian, or $35, $36 American. Good thing I wasn't buying it from anywhere else. I'm getting the physical release T-shirt patch, and a downloadable version with, of course, a downloadable PDF of the lyrics. All for, what was that, $45 Canadian from Throsten Blot. You can find them at throstenblot.bandcamp.com. Their new album, Metal Chthonia, comes out tomorrow. You can actually find it on streaming right now on No Clean Singing, which they have a review/album stream. I am so infinitely excited about this. You people have absolutely no idea. How excited am I? I'm going to go listen to all the other Throsten Blot albums first, then just loop this new one. Oh, yeah.
Well,
my body is ready.
Speaking of looping, I made a discovery today as I was listening to Spotify. Finally, if you'll remember when we reviewed Clutch Psychic Warfare, I bitched and complained that it wasn't uploaded to Spotify. Well, it finally is. It took this long. But not only is Psychic Warfare uploaded, they uploaded a deluxe version with three extra tracks. And one of those tracks is a cover of their intro song that they used to walk them out on stage. And it instantly has become the Rattlage and Broadcasting, when it's not the Metal Hammer of Doom, that has its own outro music, thanks to Mr. Cooper. But for all the rest of our podcasts that at least I host or am a part of, we have new outro music brought to us by Clutch. This is a cover of We Need Some Money. So for Mr. Cooper, be well. I am your mandated reporter, Mark Ratledge. This has been the Ratledge and Broadcasting Network review of Voltron Legendary Defender Season 1. Be well, be safe, and behave. More importantly, give us some money.
I'm gonna lay right on the line. A dollar bill is a friend of mine.